where are we in terms of research on this mental fatigue recovery spectrum?
Yeah, I think we made really good progress in the space of like giving it some attention in sport, in that like I think it's much more discussed. I have a lot of people, you know, coming to me and coming to other colleagues that work in this space who are really wanting to understand what it might look like for their athletes or how they might be able to consider an aid. I think we did a paper last year, I think it came out this year, that was basically like exploring how multidisciplinary high performance practitioners, so that might be like a coach, a physio, a team doctor, a dietitian, you know, like the people that make up the MDT, and basically understanding like what do they think about mental fatigue? Do they think it's even important? How do they manage it?
Hi, Susie. It's my pleasure to have you on Evidence Strong Show. If you could briefly introduce yourself.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, inviting me along. So I am a research fellow at the Sports Performance Recovery Injury and New Technologies Research Centre, otherwise known as SPRINT at ACU. So I'm based in Brisbane, Australia, and basically have an interest in a lot of mostly applied research settings that revolve around fatigue, recovery, specifically mental fatigue, mental recovery, cognitive performance, and also quite an interest in general well-being and sort of sports tech and female athlete populations as well.
Awesome. We're just coming off the Paris Olympics. There's a lot of talk about mental health. Some athletes are taking a break. Some are about now coming back to training. So I think that topic is very, very timely, and the topic is mental fatigue in athletes. So let's start maybe with an overall, some kind of definition of what fatigue is.
This is a tricky question to start, because
why don't you
define it in lots of different ways? But fatigue essentially sort of got several definitions and concepts that a lot of, I guess, a main theme that is acknowledged in that is that it's complex and it's multi sort of faceted. But really a common thread is that we see like a decline or an impairment in performance due to sort of this inability to perform what's required and expected. And generally over time, due to like a response in loading that's happened, that might be physical, that might be mental. And obviously there's, I guess I always think of fatigue, there's lots of different types of stimulus that might induce fatigue. So some people might be looking at it from like a muscular perspective or biomechanical perspective, or potentially sleep deprivation, inadequate nutrition. Like there's lots and lots of different areas that can contribute, that all probably do contribute at the same time. And obviously I have more of a specific interest in that mental or cognitive side. And I think fatigue in sports is an interesting one, because I think in general society and life, it's seen as a very negative thing, like has negative connotations attached. But actually definitely something I've really learned and appreciate is that fatigue isn't always bad. You know, we might be intentionally programming and inducing it to get some kind of adaptation, or we might be deliberately avoiding it and minimizing it around competition. So yeah, it's very complex and multifaceted, but that's sort of my take on what it is.
Okay, you said a very important thing, that fatigue is not always bad. Sometimes we are after an athlete being fatigued because that's the requirement for adaptation. Now, what about mental fatigue? What it is, and is it always bad, or are there any cases where mental fatigue is good?
Yeah, so again, by sort of textbook definition, it's a psychobiological state, which is what generally is referred to, which means obviously it has like psychological and biological, physiological aspects to it, that is generally induced by what they call prolonged periods. Again, a very sort of loose definition of what is a demanding cognitive activity. So that would be something that basically requires sustained mental efficiency or attention by someone. And what that really means is that it can be a task that you're undertaking, that you're engaged with, that feels cognitively challenging in some way. And that's for you as an individual. So there might be lots of different things that I guess induce mental fatigue in different people. And I guess like part of that is that we're gaining more understanding of what it looks like in sport. And in terms of, I guess, what you ask about, is it always bad? Should it always be avoided? A lot of the literature, again, and research is really focused. And I say a lot, there is some really good work in the mental restoration space too, but it's been focused on this, like avoiding mental fatigue, it's bad. And yes, it has impairments on performance, or it shows some impairments on performance, but it also, and this is gaining more and more attention and research as well, can be used in sort of a training setting, much like you would with physical fatigue, to try and build a tolerance or resistance to experiencing mental fatigue or the performance decrements that might come when you are under mental fatigue. So yeah, similar, I kind of try and explain it to people in a similar way to how you would program and periodize and deliberately think about physical fatigue, and that they should sort of spend a bit more time potentially thinking about that in their athletes as well, particularly in sports that might be physical but also technical in nature.
So the part of my audience is Olympic weightlifting coaches and athletes, and Olympic weightlifting is an individual sport, and it based on 3 trials for snatch and 3 trials for clean and jerk. That's all you get, 6 lifts. Each one goes from, I don't know, a few to maybe 15 seconds in total. So it's, if we put it together, it's like 1 minute performance, which will be mentally pretty taxing. So if you think that's the sport requires your mental capacity to be sharp, on point, and ready. What are the things that could build up too much of a mental fatigue?
Yeah, I think like weightlifting, it's really interesting because I was thinking about this before. Most like of the evidence around like power or singular effort is to show like there's not that much influence of mental fatigue, and it's more around those endurance sports. But in terms of the idea of like if mental fatigue builds up per se, like we don't know neurophysiologically exactly if that is happening. There's potential that it sort of dissipates with sleep due to the mechanisms that we think are involved. But the concept that you talk about around like the sort of mental load of the whole environment and it being quite demanding, so those fatiguing or mentally fatiguing stimuluses in the weightlifting setting might not be, like it might be the technical lift, but it might more be the other things that are going on around that, such as like the consequences of competition or, you know, media or social, you know, promotions and things that athletes or sub-elite athletes might be doing to obtain financial support around their sport. Or it might be the sort of analysis and planning with their coach about selections of weights and what they're going to lift. It might even be things like if they've driven a long way themselves to get to a competition, or they've had to travel, or, you know, all those like logistical things that also happen in our lives that, I mean, I guess everyone, the day-to-day person does deal with in their life, but often when they're related to performance, they can really be like quite demanding and loading for people. And it might be those kind of things, as well as just like being in the competition environment, there being new stimuli, there being crowds, there being, you know, different weights or set up to maybe something that they're used to. So it might be those type of things that might contribute and potentially sort of accumulate this sort of mental fatigue over time, or that they might feel that on that day.
Awesome. What are the consequences of mental fatigue? So why do we even care whether the athlete is mentally fatigued or not? Like in weightlifting, there is a mental component to it. Could we just accept that it is and not care about it? Why should we care?
Yeah, for sure. I think it's definitely something that's growing in terms of a consideration for practitioners. And I always sort of think of it that it might not be that relevant to an athlete. Like they might be in a case where they don't really experience mental fatigue and the structures and support are very much in place for them, where they've balanced, either they've built that resilience to that cognitive demand, or they basically like, can adapt and still perform underneath it. So, but I think generally the evidence will show us that athletes do experience fluctuations in mental fatigue sort of over time and over their sort of pre-season or in-season phases. And there might be in those instances some elevations that occur that then they might be at risk of impaired performance during those times. Also, I think it's important that it might not just be on that competition day. If you're thinking about, so like if we take weightlifting context, it might not be that they necessarily can't lift as much on that one day. It's more likely to influence their day-to-day training and their technical, you know, performance in training and the way that they're lifting when they're doing maybe higher reps or load, and the way they're turning up to training and how intentional they are and how much they're able to take on, you know, feedback from their coach and that kind of thing. So I think you've got to think about it as the whole picture and not just in competition. But from general sort of research and reviews, we know that it does have the potential to affect like physical, technical, tactical, and obviously the psychological, psychomotor aspects of performance. So yeah, I briefly touched on that the strongest or largest body of evidence really exists around that endurance space. So lots of things like cycling time trials, running 3K or 5K, or things like a yo-yo intermittent recovery test that we might see done in like team sports. And that's sort of all around the mechanism that people, when they're mentally fatigued, experience greater perception of effort. So it feels harder to do the same activity, essentially. So therefore, they sort of might reduce their performance as a result. So that's why we tend to see, I guess, over time in those endurance a bigger impact. Whereas like on the short isolated tasks, it might not have such an impact, but we also haven't looked, or the evidence really hasn't explored that well, what happens when we're like repeatedly doing those movements, which is why I talk about like in training. Yeah, just one lift in isolation, we might not have that impact, or one 30-second effort on the bike, we might not see such an impact. But that doesn't necessarily mean that technically, or even the selection of weights, for example, has been shown to change. So if you're self-selecting your weight in a gym session, if you're mentally fatigued, people will choose a lower weight, or they will have an increased session RP in response to the same weight. So it's sort of minor things like that, that if you're really, really at a high level of training and competition, that might impact. And then the other part is sort of around that technique side. So again, mostly the evidence is more in like team sports, but the number of errors and tackles and things that people might make, their impairments in like 3-point shot performance and turnovers and stuff in basketball. So, and like AFL kicking accuracy, like there's quite a few studies like in isolated different sports that indicate there's some of those technical aspects. And then also quite interestingly, some more recent evidence that's not necessarily like really sports specific, but it makes us think about the potential links that might exist between mental fatigue and certain injury types, because there's some evidence now around like risks and falls, which I guess, has relation potentially to thinking about like lifting really heavy and that technique aspect as well. So yeah, I think it's one of those things that's really situational, much like I guess physical fatigue is, as to whether it does impact that performance. But I think really stepping back and assessing and considering, like I said at the start, the periodization and thought around what does this program and competition look like in terms of mental fatigue for me? And yeah, how can I maybe, assess it or manage it a bit better? Yeah. And hopefully we'll see some evidence in the weightlifting space at some point soon. I don't think it exists yet.
Awesome. Do we have anything to say about the length of development, how quickly the mental fatigue develops?
Yeah, so generally like in literature, you'll see like a, 30 minute, 45 minute, 60 or kind of 90 minute like cognitive task that's inducing. So yeah, that's what you spoke about at the start there of, that might be an acute bout or example. And I guess in the athlete setting, it's thinking about, there might be those acute things like social media use for that time or something before competition. But this kind of concept that repeated exposure, much like physical, repeated exposure to a mental fatigue demand or stimulus without the adequate following mental restoration or mental recovery can sort of in theory at least result into just accumulation or elevation of baseline perceptions and experiences of mental fatigue. So if you think about that just repeated stimulus without adequate recovery, naturally over time things would then, build up and the athlete might experience at least subjectively greater mental fatigue. You've got sort of, again, like a number of aspects that might be contributing to how they experience that. And I think in that case, there's probably, there's some things that you can do maybe to outsource some of that with, like a manager or like, scheduling social media posts and things so you're not putting yourself under that. But also really prioritizing that mental recovery aspect there, because some of those things you can't change. Like you have to travel, you have to go to this new environment. It's, part of the sport and it's actually an exciting thing and part of what's great about sport is that there's some unknown. But yeah, definitely some of those factors that you might be able to control or minimize might help athletes. And just, them having them and their coaches having some awareness and just being cognizant of like what they're experiencing mentally in terms of fatigue and just communicating that between them as well, which might help them, modify a session a tiny bit or that kind of thing if needed, can also be useful.
Would you have any ways to measure fatigue?
There are ways that we indicate mental fatigue in both a lab and applied-based setting. So essentially, by definition or by literature, we would say that you can indicate it through a state of subjective, as you've already said, some behavioral and also some neurophysiological changes. So we might have those neurophysiological markers, just to touch on them really briefly. And they might be like fMRI or EEG. So that's just looking at the brain through scanning and different ways of signals. So they, don't have application in the applied setting. They're quite expensive to run. You need someone that's skilled to do them. And also they can often, be influenced by like movement artifact and when we're maybe wanting to look at things in certain settings that might be less useful. So because of that, like what's that's really useful in helping us, and I'm involved in a few studies that, help us sort of explore the underlying mechanisms potentially that are going on and answering some questions there, probably less useful to our, practitioners and athletes that might be listening to this. So when we look and think about that, we tend to look at either behavioral or subjective markers of mental fatigue. So in terms of behavioral indicators, these might be increased response time or reduced like response accuracy on short cognitive tasks, for example. And there's also, interestingly, a lot of behavioral indicators that have subjectively come from athletes and practitioners and what they've reported. So from their observations or even from athletes' feelings themselves. So just small things like maybe feeling withdrawn or the intention that they're going to put into that session. Like that's maybe something that a coach could observe and have a conversation with the athlete about and might be an indicator that's observable or measurable from that perspective, despite not being like, you know, a validated scale or way, but there are sort of indicators that occur. And then we have these sort of like actual subjective changes that are reported. So there's some subjective scales that exist, mostly used as like the visual analog scale, which just can be a way to track, I guess, mental fatigue. It can be a challenge in some settings for athletes to differentiate, or it's really important you explain really well to them like those differentiations between physical fatigue and mental fatigue. And they might sort of experience them hand in hand in some cases, but really educating them on that mental aspect and what it might mean to them can be really important.
Could you just explain, if someone would like to implement the measurement and use VASCAL, could you just explain how they should set up, what the question should be, and how they should set up the measurement?
Yeah, sure. So it would basically be what we call visual analog is just 0 to 100 usually, but often if it's done on an electronic device, it might not be 100 millimeters in length because of the screen that they're using. But the idea is that it's anchored from 0, which is none at all, at one end, to maximal, which is 100 at the other end. And what you would, I guess, explain to them and talk to them about is like, you know, this is sort of the definition of mental fatigue. This is some of the things that athletes have previously indicated might induce mental fatigue and some of the feelings that they have. So that might be talking about things like decreased attention to detail, decreased, you know, engagement, maybe, you know, greater withdrawal, increased emotional response, you know, setting the scene for them around what mental fatigue might be, and probably actually having a conversation between the practitioner and the coach about what mental fatigue is for that athlete, making sure they have a good reference understanding of what they're actually answering. And then you could use or implement that scale, you know, on a daily basis before training, for example, or potentially a couple of times a week as well. And just using it to kind of understand where they're at each day before or after they've participated in training could be a useful thing.
Thank you. How can we manage mental fatigue? Is there anything we can do?
So there's kind of two different ways that we can think about managing mental fatigue. So there's these ways that might be strategies which acutely mitigate or minimize the mental fatigue that we're experiencing or the effect of that mental fatigue on the performance acutely. And then there's this sort of like second approach or camp that would, you know, look at maybe, okay, how do we expose our athletes to mental fatigue routinely so that they build that sort of resilience or ability to cope with mental fatigue and perform under mental fatigue even if they experience it. So the biggest thing that I sort of think here is that you can use both. Like it's not a one or the other. It's not. And I think thinking about it really proactively is important. So thinking about that day-to-day management, and much like we do with physical load, what is an appropriate balance of that mental demand and mental recovery? So we essentially want both. And we want some variability there to allow us to adapt and respond. But it's really prioritizing it in an acute sense, but also building that tolerance. So we have more research that looks at the acute mitigation. So how to sort of, there's a really good systematic review out of Belgium about how to tackle mental fatigue. So the different strategies that exist to do that. So that might be things that you can do immediately prior or even during an activity to try and have protective or reduce the effects of mental fatigue. So caffeine is one that is our friend often, based on sort of the mechanistic premise. We can reduce basically the mental fatigue experience, the rating of perceived exertion, and also the subsequent performance effects of mental fatigue by caffeine. Some specific scents has also been shown to basically reduce people's experiences of mental fatigue. And then there's also things like listening to specific music. So this might be certain beating tones with different frequencies, for example. It might be a self-selected pleasant music that someone has a like basically preference for themselves. It might also be things like using biofeedback breathing. So just regulating something and sort of looking at your internal markers as well. You also, we've got studies that show us that if you give people visual performance feedback about like how they're going and how they're tracking on that task, that can help basically reduce or mitigate some of that mental fatigue, probably by providing some extrinsic motivation of how they're moving along. So there's a few different strategies there. And then also things like, you know, 20-minute power nap intervention, plus sort of some mental imagery and this idea of like restorative environments. So if you think about somewhere that feels like mentally restorative to you, which often things like being exposed to nature, so like a nice hike or a mountainous area or a beach area, for example, and either immersing people just themselves by imagining or also using like VR, or even better, like going to the actual beach or area, which is interesting because actually a lot of like teen camps and stuff are often run, if they can be, near the beach, which then they get that benefit, right, of also the physical, of the cold, potentially water and things, but also of that mental restoration and being somewhere different. So there's all those kind of strategies. And then we also have this sort of idea that alongside caffeine, creatine might be beneficial. So sort of a loading dose of that, particularly sort of looking sort of about the availability of phosphocreatine is like the theory behind that, rather than thinking more so like some of the others do, which are more focused on adenosine. So yeah, basically allowing athletes to have some restorative time and switch off that load. And that might also be things like if coaches are prescribing a day off for that athlete, you know, they're also like allowed to be mentally switched off. So they're not expected to respond to like a group or a team message or a WhatsApp chat or have some coach to put their programming in on that day or schedule things that they're then going to look at and try and like figure out what's going on for them. Like really giving them a complete restorative time away from that activity can be helpful. So they're sort of some of the like acute or more sort of recovery focused mitigating ways. And then I guess the other side is that, yeah, we want to try and look at building that tolerance. So that might be really, really focusing on designing training in a way that we want to make it mentally demanding for them. So maybe focusing on technical things, or there's a number of cognitive applications that exist now that kind of basically allow you to potentially use them intermittently to cognitively demand you between reps or sets, for example, that might be a useful tool for people to also apply. And then there's some sort of evidence there as well that like the daily life of like, you know, working and doing other things, or potentially people that have to look after families and those kind of things, might be a bit more resilient or tolerant. So your day-to-day exposure of those environments is also important.
Okay, just an idea. So if we have physical fatigue and mental fatigue, do they add up? Is it one bucket, or they are totally separate and they don't influence each other?
Yeah. Another really challenging question. I think in some settings, we've seen that they're like largely separate constructs, but there is still some overlap between them. And I think similar to what I said at the beginning about it being so multifaceted, like there's not necessarily one facet that exists in isolation or contributes to everything. Like it might be a certain contribution of mental fatigue, but very rarely that's going to be the only factor that's contributing from a fatigue perspective. So I would say definitely look at them sort of as a big picture all together, and it's sort of being all the different colors that might contribute to create that. But just in some cases, one might be stronger than the other. And yeah, there is obviously the idea that if you're mentally fatigued, your physical performance can be impaired because that physical task feels harder to you. So in that way, yeah, they do definitely interact. There's also the side that in, you know, exercise, like a 30-minute aerobic walk, for example, might be like beneficial from a mental recovery perspective. So yeah, there is definitely some interaction there. They're definitely not isolated concepts, but it's more just thinking about how they might interact, but also how you might be able to manage each of them and target each of them individually is also important.
And is there any difference in mental fatigue in females and male athletes?
Yeah, so I think my response to this would be, at least evidence-wise, it generally depends on the individual rather than to be guided by the sex of an athlete per se. There is some research in, which I can't remember the specific paper, but that looks at driving fatigue, and that indicates that females might be more susceptible to driving fatigue. But I think, again, you've got to think about like the task and cultural specifics of that research rather than thinking that that's going to blanket apply everywhere. There is like some considerations, I'd say, like there's a paper that shows us, you know, like occupational demand and our cardiorespiratory fitness might influence mental fatigue, which therefore, like if you think about how that exists in males and females, might have an impact. The thing that I think in this setting is often just thinking about it practically, and I don't want to generalize it. Obviously at like sub-elite levels, this might be. So if we think about like sub-elite or potentially females who have more off-pitch demands than potentially like a full-time male professional athlete. So they might be experiencing, you know, more sort of travel to unfamiliar venues, more family and caring responsibilities. There might be some more financial stress around, you know, contracts and that kind of things, or if they're getting any income. And there's a Deakin report that shows us like the gendered harm for female athletes through social media is actually quite strong and often greater than males. So if you think about that perspective, and not to say males don't experience it, more just like, you know, the findings of the report indicate the females might have to have greater emotional regulation required to think, you know, respond to those negative comments and process them internally. So that might impose greater cognitive demands. And then you've got a report from FIFA in women footballers showing us that, you know, often female footballers might have multiple job holdings. So they might have, you know, to provide social, cultural factors that might mean that we have to support and have greater cognitive demand. They might be working, they often have lower wages and need to work or study outside, or they might take on traditional caring roles. And again, that's really general. I don't want to say that male athletes are not doing that, but if you're thinking about those differences, I think it's likely, although there might be some theoretical premise from the researchers a bit wishy-washy in that space, but like around females and hormones and that kind of thing. But more so, I think it's probably contextually and environmentally. And you could either think of that from like a male and female perspective, or the way I would do it is just think about, treat everyone as an individual and look at their context and definitely consider, you know, the cultural and environmental factors around them that might be causing some cognitive demand for them.
Excellent. That sounds good. So what do you think, where are we in terms of research on this mental fatigue recovery spectrum?
Yeah, I think we made really good progress in the space of like giving it some attention in sport, in that like I think it's much more discussed. I have a lot of people, you know, coming to me and coming to other colleagues that work in this space who are really wanting to understand what it might look like for their athletes or how they might be able to consider an aid. I think we did a paper last year, I think it came out this year, that was basically like exploring how multidisciplinary high performance practitioners, so that might be like a coach, a physio, a team doctor, a dietitian, you know, like the people that make up the MDT, and basically understanding like what do they think about mental fatigue? Do they think it's even important? How do they manage it? Like, and from that we see that interestingly, a lot of them don't feel very knowledgeable about mental fatigue or mental recovery, and they feel even less capable or less confident in applying what they do think they know to practice, which tells us there's probably an evidence gap in the protocols that we can provide to sport. But despite them saying it, the vast majority, I think it's 96%, think that it's important and it impacts training and competition. So there's obviously potentially a bias in those who engaged with the survey because they obviously had some interest in it to even follow through and follow that link. I find it really interesting that it's like people think it's a factor that they need to consider, but they're not necessarily like there yet in terms of how they assess it or how they manage it. And that particularly was shown by, I guess, the lack of evidence-based strategies. And again, that's not necessarily a flaw on the practitioner's side. That's also like, oh, an area that we need to advance the research and advance the translation across to help practitioners, you know, have evidence-based protocols that fit in sports settings to actually apply. So yeah, I think the field is really progressing and there's interest and engagement here, but it's just sort of supporting and trying to justify or make the case for where it is important for those athletes that are experiencing it and it's impacting, that there's space made to prioritize it as well. I think there's so many pieces of the puzzle that are going on in sport that everyone is trying to stay on top of. And I think sort of my advice there is like just pick something small that you can work with. So that might be just enhancing like how your athlete basically mentally recovers. So talking to them about things and trying to help them prioritize some time for that and blocking out schedule for that and making that part of their, you know, training and recovery processes as a starting block. Like doesn't have to be a major step of it becomes like a central part of the program, but it's like, how can you trickle that in from a practitioner perspective? And I think just educating yourself, you know, listening to podcasts like this, or there's a few blog posts and things available and infographics that can help, even if you don't want to sit and read through whole papers all day. You know, there's quite a few people are really making effort to put this into a sort of dissemination way that's digestible for people and for coaches who might be limited in time. So yeah, I think there's still a long way to go, but I think we've made really good progress and I think it's important to acknowledge that.
Would you have three main things the coaches and athletes could take from this interview on mental fatigue?
Sure. I think the first is probably to be aware that mental fatigue exists, and it might be one of the many aspects of fatigue that might influence your performance, and particularly in the training setting. I think the second is probably that to know what is mentally fatiguing for you as an individual. So to sort of stock take and think about, okay, what might cause or what might be mentally demanding in my environment, whether that's sport related or whether that's life related, and really consider that and just look at that and how it appears and how it looks on the schedule for you. And then thirdly, I would say knowing that, you know, you want to get that balance right of mental demand and mental recovery, and thinking about some small strategies, you know, trying different strategies that might be useful, that are not that arduous, that are acute, that you can slowly implement into your schedule, and just giving them a go and seeing what works or doesn't work for you. And then trying to make that a regular routine so you can be really proactive about, you know, managing that mental fatigue, or specifically targeting that mental recovery and restoration. Will probably be my takeaways.
I love it. Okay, two short questions to finish. The first one is, what is your favorite color?
My favorite color is probably yellow. I'm a really big fan of getting outside, enjoying time in the sun and daylight. So that's probably why I like it.
Awesome. And the last one is, where people can find you if they want to follow your work and see what you're up to and maybe ask a question.
For sure. So I'm on LinkedIn. I am on Twitter or X, but tend to use it less nowadays. And then also on Instagram. And you can find my LinkedIn and Twitter, and also my email on my ACU Sprint website research profile. So that's probably the best way to go, and then go from there to reach out.
So your name would be how people look like?
It's Susanna_Russell, I think.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Susie. It was a pleasure.
No worries. It's great to chat to you, Alex. Thanks for having me.